Welcome to the podcast that's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and here with me is our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everybody.
And a special guest today. We don't have Nate, our CEO, with us. He's at some all-inclusive resort enjoying the spoils of vacation. But we've got our filmmaker, our in-house filmmaker, and resident pretty much pro cyclist, Dave Christensen. What's up, Dave?
Hi, thanks for having me, you guys.
And for those that don't know, Dave actually edits these every time after we record them. Dave's the guy doing that, so he's familiar with what's going on.
I've heard every episode.
Intimately.
And just so you guys can also get a better picture of Dave, so Dave, what's your watt kg? What do you weigh, and what's your FTP?
So right now I am 65 kgs, and last FTP assessment was 323 watts. So that's my FTP right now, 323.
He's a beast. He's raced in Asia and some UCI races over there, some stage races, races all over the place. And he races with Chad on the Herbalife, the H24 cycling team. So those guys are the Herbalife Nature's Bakery team. I think that's the name, guys. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, I'm not entirely sure either.
It's Herbalife.
They're in there.
Herbalife presented by Mark Pro Nature's Bakery.
There it is.
There we are. So, and you guys are headed off to Dave, you're leaving tonight, right?
Yeah, I'm leaving tonight to go to Chico stage race.
Nice. And Chad's heading over tomorrow morning for that. And for those that don't know, it's a pretty well-known stage race up here in NorCal, right, Chad?
Yeah, it is. It gets a pretty big Pro 1-2 draw. And the Masters field's filling up as well. And then all the other lower category fields are packed full.
Yeah, we've had some big names there over the years for sure. Horner was there last year, right, with his air gas team. I don't know if he'll be here again this year, but Horner didn't win last year, I don't think. I'm not sure, but I don't believe he did. So
no, I don't remember who won. I think it might have been an Optum rider. I'm not sure.
It's a tough stage race. You get to race around a car track circuit tomorrow. And then after that, they have a long road race with a big dirt section, super famous. And then the next day you wake up to a tough, what is it, like a 20-minute time trial roughly, guys?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, around a 20-minute TT. And then you finish everything off that same day with a crit on Sunday. So yeah, it's a cool race. If any of you ever get the chance to come out and check it out, I would definitely give that one a shot. It's very cool. And if any of you are looking for pictures, look for Alex Chiu. That's C-H-I-U. He has some really cool pictures from last year with all the riders coming through the valley with all the dust. Pretty cool stuff. So before we get into the questions too, one other thing, we had somebody this week, Chad, talk to us about training twice a day, essentially doing two different workouts, and intentionally so, not like accidentally, and not splitting something in half necessarily, but actually having two scheduled workouts. I know you've written a blog post on this, but why would somebody train twice a day, and what do they need to know?
Typically, the benefits are only going to happen with a high-intensity workout coupled with a low-intensity workout. Which order you do them in is up to you and will obviously influence how each of the two interact. But largely, I recommend them as the lower-intensity one as the follow-up workout. So, and it doesn't even have to be in the same day so much as in the same 24-hour period. So once you've done a high intensity workout and, you know, basically cooked yourself, depleted glycogen stores, et cetera. And then you get on the bike inside of 24 hours, you know, maybe well inside of 24 hours and spin for, you know, any length of time, 45, 60, maybe even 90 minutes of low intensity riding. There's a certain amount of things that happen all the way down to like the cellular level and even a signaling level, like a genetic level. And then there's just depleted riding. So you don't have your glycogen hasn't fully restored. So you're basically forced to metabolize more fat. It has certain benefits to your aerobic capabilities and not to mention tissue pliability that happens when you get back on the bike and noodle rather than sit around and let your muscles tense up.
Dave, you've been using this recently, right? You've been a form or a variant of that, or what have you been doing with your, because you mentioned the other day you're doing two a days.
Yeah, actually, I haven't done it this week just because I didn't want to have the added fatigue for Chico. But I wake up at 5 a.m. and I get on the bike for 30 minutes. Really easy. Just, you know, and I kind of make sure that it's been about 12 to 14 hours since I ate. And that is just to shed a little bit of body fat. You know, we're coming out of winter, and you know, actually what spurred it was I got my body fat checked at our training camp, and I was at 7%, and ideally I should be at 6%. So not much to lose, but you know, going up climbs, it does make a difference. So
Dave and I are head to head with body fat, but that's it. Everything else, he's far ahead. So
yeah, but that's actually Dave, in my opinion, that's about the best use of 2-a-day rides is looking for fat loss. You know, you do accumulate some extra mileage. You may gain a little bit of aerobic benefit and whatnot. But the big deal is that your body's forced to metabolize fat, and it's just extra time on the bike. And absolutely, when you do these in a depleted state, it's pretty obvious that you're going to be metabolizing fat. But if you happen to do these later in the day, same thing, you know, don't drink half a bottle of Gatorade and then hop on the bike and expect to shed any fat.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I should mention too, that I drink a cup of black coffee before I get on, just to, you know, kickstart it with no, you know, calories in at all. But I don't know if that really works. It's just a thing I'm trying.
Cool. So I hopefully that gives you all the info and some advice there. I've used it to great success too. Last year I took care of my training in the morning or at lunchtime, and then in the evening I would get home and I would have an easy ride with my wife outside. That's another good kind of if you're looking to kill multiple birds with a stone, spend some time with the family or anything else. When you're soft pedaling around with your kids, that's something that you can use. You can take that into account at least. So.
Yeah, and this is pretty well researched. It's effective. It does work on a lot of levels, but especially the fat loss one.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into it with Alan's question. He says, "Hi, when cycling indoors, I find my heart rate is higher compared to cycling on the turbo. I use a power meter on the road and an Erg turbo indoors. I've tried my power meter on my turbo to make sure there is no major difference in wattage, and there isn't. So I'm at a loss as to why tempo at 200 watts outside means my heart rate is 160 to 175. And that's beats per minute, of course. But indoors on the turbo, it's 145 to 160. I have a high max heart rate at 205, but the increased heart rate makes threshold and VO2 intervals tougher to do outside. Could it be ambient temperature being much lower outside, or that I'm using more muscles to balance myself on the moving bike as opposed to being stationary on the turbo?"
Yeah, Alan, if I had to guess, I would lean toward the latter possibility, because of the first one. In the case of ambient temperature, typically lower ambient temps mean, you know, lower relative heart rates. So that's probably not it. You're doing something differently when you ride outdoors than you are doing indoors. And it may be that maybe you move around a lot more. Maybe you're in and out of the saddle more. Either way, you're working harder. So for the same watts, you're actually performing more work, you know, taking a greater physical toll. So I'm not sure exactly what to attribute it to. You've already ruled out the fact that it could be, you know, the discrepancy between your power meter and your erg trainer. So I would guess that something about your riding style requires more activity or more muscular contribution when you ride outdoors than indoors.
Have you noticed this at all, Dave? Do you notice a difference in your heart rate at power inside and outside?
You know, I have to defer to you guys because I don't even train with heart rate at all. I don't, I know that it is valuable, definitely valuable. I just take it out of the equation. Just works for me.
Yeah. So along those lines, I'm much like Dave. I used to train with a heart rate monitor all the time, even with a power meter, of course, but I've actually changed that and I'm using just more power these days because I found that many times my heart rate data was misleading for one reason or another. Having said that, Alan, and once again, this is just us, like Chad said, we're providing our best guesses here. And one thing that I would say is, depending on what heart rate monitor you have, they could be susceptible to different things, whether it's dropouts or whether it's anything else like that. That could be affecting it. I'm not sure. The actual electrodes, if you're using a chest strap, that could be changing things. I've always had great success, and I know this may seem like we're always pumping Wahoo stuff, and we have no formal relationship with like that, but I really do like their ticker, that heart rate monitor.
As do I.
It works really well. There's none of the, I don't know if you've noticed, but when your jersey flaps on your heart rate monitor, if you're going down a descent or anything else like that, and you have wind and it's tapping your heart rate monitor, a lot of the time it throws off the readings and makes them go sky high. And descending on a mountain bike caused that all the time. So I actually switched over to the ticker and I haven't had a single problem since I've switched over. not saying that your heart rate monitor is the problem. It's just another thing to check off the box, potentially in this case. So, Keith, love the podcast and Trainer Road. I've tried the other training programs and none of them compare. Keep up the great work. Sweet. It's good stuff. When performing a 20-minute FTP test, the instructions suggest not to worry about aerodynamics. However, as I begin my 8-week build toward Ironman California 70.3 and assess changes in my FTP, should I assess outdoors, but more importantly, in my aero position on my tri bike to get a more accurate representation of what my goal wattage should be on the race course?
So Keith, as you get closer to your event, obviously you want the training to become increasingly specific. And if you plan to compete in an aerodynamic position, then obviously you're going to want to do some of your workouts in an aerodynamic position. But the problem is if it doesn't fairly assess your fitness, then if you assess in an aero position and maybe you get a slightly low reading, but then you're going to do all of your workouts in your aero position, no problem because everything's relative. But if you're going to do some of your workouts, like your high intensity stuff, sitting up, then that workout's probably not going to be as challenging as it's supposed to be. With that said, you do need to, when you start out, your threshold is one thing, but your aero threshold is perhaps another. Over the course of your training, those two should come closer into line with one another, such that, maybe as you begin your specialty training, you actually can assess in your aero position and it doesn't cost you any wattage. That's ideal. It doesn't always happen, but that would be one case where I'd say gravitate toward assessing in your aero position. But unless you're going to do all of your workouts, and this goes with outdoors too, unless you're going to do all of your workout in your aero position or all of your workouts outdoors, then I would recommend keeping your assessments indoors and upright for now.
Dave, you have a TT bike that you regularly use. And on road, of course, there's a number of different positions. What do you do on the trainer as far as positioning?
You mean versus just my training, or do I?
Yeah. So when you're on the trainer, are you the type of guy that just rides in the most comfortable position, or are you objective about it? How do you use the different positions that you have and intersperse that with your TT bike and all that stuff?
So, well, I don't ride the TT bike as much as I probably should, but I have been riding it a lot because there's a time trial in this stage race that we're doing. And I honestly put out more power upright on a road bike. I usually have a bit of a difference on what I can actually maintain in the TT position. But that being said, I do train on the TT bike on the trainer at my same wattage numbers, just because, like Chad said, I think that if you train enough that you can close that gap and you can get those numbers in line for sure.
Yeah, Keith, you want to keep in mind that primarily when we train, we're after increasing our work capacity. So you want to do that in a position that allows you to do it. So if being hunched over in your aerodynamic position might not push those boundaries. Whereas if you sit up, you grow that capacity, then when you do have to slip back into your aero position, if you're still working at 90% of that same capacity, well, that capacity has risen, so that 90% comes up as well. So they may not ever be as closely in line as you'd hope, but as long as your work capacity goes up, your fitness goes up, your FTP goes up, then when you get down into that aero position, it'll come up a bit as well.
I do want to add that I think, at least for most people, it's a lot harder to do intervals on your TT bike indoors on a trainer, which makes it easier outside, I've found. Just because you're not moving as much, like you don't have that sway side to side, so if you can hold high power on a TT bike indoors, it's going to feel easier outside, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it'll certainly help you dial in that position. So that's kind of an unrelated note. Don't want to get down on that tangent, but as Dave said, it's going to be fixed in there. So you'll notice any type of problem with it.
But then Keith, I do want to add that it is crucially important, depending on the type of athlete you are, that you spend a lot of time in your aero position. So I might be saying you don't necessarily have to test in your aero position, but you do have to spend a fair amount of time, a lot of time, depending. If you're an Ironman triathlete, then you have to spend a heck of a lot of time in that aero position.
And conversely, for those that are going to be riding for one reason or another in a more upright position, the same goes for that. It's the principle is you train where you race in as far as positioning goes. So it certainly helps. John, hello. I love the podcast and the program. I've been using Trainer Road for 2 winters, and it is by far my favorite training program. The more I use it, the more I like it. I have an obtuse question. You said that, not us. a friend and I both did the Sufferfest The Way Out workout. After it was over, she commented that my FTP was too low since I did most of the workout in the endurance and tempo heart rate zones. However, my FTP is set at 210, which is higher than I tested. Then I did the 8-minute test. I tested at 196, and my heart rate for the test was mostly in the tempo, sweet spot, and threshold range. I know I don't do the FTP test well, because the tested FTP always makes the workouts feel too easy. But I don't think I'm far off at 210. I have a very large heart rate range. In the last month, my resting heart rate has been as low as 40, and my max is as high as 189. I'm always about or less than 45 beats for my resting heart rate, and just above 184 for my max heart rate. I want to get the most out of my workout, so I'd like to get my FTP right. I did 9 hammers, and that's another Sufferfest workout for those that don't know. I did 9 hammers today and did not feel like I could do another interval when I was done. Okay, maybe one more. I suppose I should mention that I will be 61 in a couple of months, but have long been doing endurance work. So another heart rate issue, Chad.
Yeah, so John, this is why we typically or almost always defer to power. You want to get the most out of your workouts. You know what your FTP is. You know that when you go by heart rate, your workouts are a little too easy. The fact of the matter is power trumps heart rate. And it's for a whole number of reasons that we've covered many times before. But in your case, I think you got a lactate heart rate reading when you did your FTP assessment, and you're looking at that, and it might not correlate as closely as you'd like with power. So defer to power, because for whatever reason, going by heart rate values is under challenging you.
I was just going to ask Chad, like, could the, you know, an 8-minute test, could there be a bit of the lag too? I mean, I've trained with heart rate, but I'm just wondering, like, is 8 minutes enough for it to get up there, or could there be lag?
Oh, no, there's absolutely enough time to get up there. The heart rate stabilizes typically after, geez, I think it's like 60, 90 seconds, maybe a couple minutes, but it certainly will level out. And I'm not entirely sure how we do the heart rate calculation for the 8-minute test, or if we do one, but I wouldn't trust it, simply because heart rate is subject to too many variables. Power is what it is.
Yeah, it's not that Chad's saying don't trust the calculations. He's just saying heart rate in general is a very variable thing. So if you do have power, it just always makes sense to default to power instead of heart rate.
Yeah. So John, in your case, if you want to kind of see how your heart rate correlates, pay more attention to power. So when you're riding at your FTP and your heart rate, you know, maybe tops out or settles at 175, then you know the FTP heart rate is roughly 175, all other factors aside. And you can kind of start to line that up with VO2 max intervals, et cetera, and see where your heart rate falls when you're at particular power outputs.
That's kind of why I don't use heart rate, because there's so many variables. Like, a good example is a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I did use heart rate, and I did a prologue time trial in a race in Thailand. Mm. It's extremely hot. You know, it's 90 degrees and 80% humidity. And for that whole time trial, my average heart rate was 201, which I do not time trial at 201. Like, that's very high, but it was totally influenced by the heat. And if I had looked at the heart rate and said, wow, exactly, my heart rate's 201, I probably would have slowed down, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you knew that you typically time trialed at 185 BPM, but you're seeing 201, then if you were working solely by heart rate, you would have backed things off, underperformed, worked well below your actual capacity, and, you know, certainly not fared as well.
And you destroyed that prologue, right, Dave? Do you remember what your average power or speed was, or time?
So that year, I'm not sure, but I did it last year, same race, same time trial. It's a prologue, very short, 7 kilometers, I think, a little over 7 kilometers. And I believe last year I did 383 for 9 minutes and change, and I got second, lost by 2 seconds.
Ugh, close. Hopefully that gives you the info you need there, John. I have nothing more to add to that. Nicholas. Hi, first of all, thanks for the interesting and motivating podcast. During the winter, I've been doing some rowing on a Concept 2 rowing machine as cross-training for cycling. As the season approaches, I'm doing more cycling, but I would like to continue rowing both to train my upper body and to vary the training. I live in Norway and have to do my training indoors for at least one more month. The last month, I've had some workouts where I start with about 30 minutes of VO2 max intervals on the Concept 2 before jumping right over to the bike to do 30 to 40 minutes of threshold training. How do you think this kind of workout affects cycling capacity? Is it okay to do it like this in the winter, or would it be a bit, or would it be a bigger benefit to get it, or would I get more benefit from getting in more hours on the bike?
So Nicholas, first off, I want to just put it out there that I'm a big fan of cross training. I think it keeps the body just functionally more healthy, just more useful, especially in wintertime when you can get away with varying things a bit and you're not as focused on that one discipline. As time moves forward, you have to decide what's more important to you. Do you want to be a good rower? Do you want to have upper body musculature that looks a particular way? Or do you want to be as fast as possible on the bike? As you transition into the build and specialization, the rowing is probably going to take a backseat, might even fall off the map entirely. But for now, I don't see any problem with it. And there is a potential benefit in that, more muscle means more lactate processing, more. So either way, when you get to the point where you're generating a lot of lactate in your lower body, it's the same bloodstream. So if you have a particularly well-adapted aerobic system in your upper body, there's benefit to what's going on as that lactate hits the system. So you can actually do a bit more work, sustain higher levels of lactate. So there is an upside to it, but you have to balance that with what it does to your performance otherwise. So 5 extra pounds of muscle may actually metabolize a bit more lactate and allow you to work at a higher power output for longer periods of time. But what does that 5 pounds do when you head uphill?
That's super interesting, because it's not, I think a lot of us cyclists, we generally just think less weight, more power. That's simply it.
And that's typically how it goes though. But there is some middle ground, and you can get away with it depending on the type of rider you are. I mean, if you're a criterium rider, you look at those guys, those are big guys. They can work at high levels of lactate. They're jamming out a lot of watts the whole time. Doesn't matter what the road looks like or what their body weight looks like relative to the fast, flat courses they typically ride. But for most of us, road races, even hilly time trials, hilly criteriums for that matter, that extra weight may not be worth the extra work.
Yeah, and I know that Dave, I'm a mountain biker, so I still do some upper body work, and I maintain that throughout the year because I don't want to lose all my strength there, because that's crucially important in those type of races. But I know Dave. I was doing, or I talked about push-ups a couple of weeks ago, and you looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah, I don't really do too much upper body at all. I do in the winter a bit of core exercises, but I find that we all work, and I'd rather spend my training time on the bike because I find it more beneficial. But I am getting a little bit older, and I was going to ask Chad, how much does age factor into adding in some of these kind of off the bike cross training sessions?
Yeah, as we age, especially, it becomes important for a number of reasons. One of them, strength maintenance. The other is mitigating the decline in certain things like VO2 max. The other is bone density. That's a big one, especially us as cyclists. We engage in this low impact exercise, and if we're not supplementing that with something either impactful like running or just tough on the bones, the joints of the body in general, like strength training, then you're setting yourself up for some pretty brittle bones as time moves on.
And cycling is low impact until it's high impact. Yeah. And when you hit on the ground, you have to make sure you're ready. Yeah, yeah. Or you could mountain bike and you fall on the ground all the time, and it tends to maybe that increases some density there. Who knows? So Nicholas, hopefully that helps. I don't know what type of training or what type of cycling you do, but that balanced approach isn't necessarily bad. It may be for some people, but not for everyone. So
yeah, and you're still building the same engine too. So if you look at it from a central adaptation perspective, where what's your heart doing, how much blood you're putting out per heartbeat, then a bigger engine is a bigger engine, whether it's in your legs or your upper body or your entire body.
Panny, hi Chad and other coaches. Firstly, love the podcast. In the last 3 years, I've completed 3 Olympic distance triathlons and 2 half distance triathlons. Good job on that. I'm currently training for a full distance triathlon and just completed your full distance low volume base plan and started the build phase with the 20-minute test. My weight is 64.5 kgs and weight to power ratio is low at 2.53 watts per kilogram, and was looking to improve this during the base phase, but disappointedly from the test, there was no increase in FTP other than 1 watt. So my question is twofold. Number one, would you expect an increase in FTP after completing the base phase? And let's take that one. Do you want to take that one first, Chad? Cool.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Absolutely, Panny. The fact that you haven't seen an increase makes me think either your consistency suffered, and I don't think that's the case, or you probably would have mentioned it. More likely, you just had a bad day. And it's a bummer when you have a bad day when you're actually assessing. But I'd be willing to bet if you reassess, and I know that's not the most appealing prospect, but if you reassessed, I'd bet you'd see more than a 1 watt increase. I'm not sure the low volume plan, yeah, but even then you're doing at least 3 solid workouts a week. And if you're hitting that consistently, I would expect to see, I can only guess what your threshold is, but you know, 3 or 4% improvement.
Yeah, and it's so, and you are it sounds like you're a pretty experienced athlete. It's not like you're brand new to this. So mm-hmm. We do see less improvement generally if you were to take somebody that's brand new. But at the same time, I would definitely see an increase in this case.
2.5 watts a kilogram. You've got a lot of room to grow. And pardon me, but I don't know if you're a male or a female. I think there's a question revolving around that later on. But even as a female, that still leaves you quite a bit of room to grow. So yeah, something's not quite right.
The next question, and this could very well be factoring into it. She says, to measure power, I'm using a combination of a Wahoo kicker and Garmin Vector pedals. If you look at the power profile for my workouts, they are very spiky, not smooth. Could this be producing a false reading? And is there any way to smooth this out? Or am I better off just using one of those?
So I'll turn this over to you,
Jonathan. Yeah, so Garmin Vector pedals are traditionally a little finicky. Doesn't mean that you can't get them spot on, but they can be pretty finicky, especially if you've removed those pedals and put them back on at any point. Even if you've used a torque wrench, many times they produce different numbers. It's unfortunate, and I think it's improved with their latest version, but that's just what we've seen from our users and different people that we ride with and everything else that use these Garmin Vector pedals. So it doesn't mean they're bad power meters, and like I said, I think they've improved, but they are finicky. They're known for being finicky. So as far as your very spiky workouts, the power profile, everyone with a power meter regardless has a spiky power profile. The kicker, when you look at it, it makes you feel fantastic, like you're just like you're a machine because it's so smooth. But the reality is we are not very good at putting out smooth power, and power meters show that, and that's okay. Really, you're just shooting to keep things as close as you can. The vectors may be spiking a little more than normal, just because of the fact that they're measuring it at your foot rather than, you know, back at the wheel like a power tap. So it'll be measuring the force perhaps more directly and all the variations there. So that could account for that. But as far as it producing a false reading, I would say setup could be one thing you could keep an eye out. And as far as better off just using one, you're always better off just using one power source and sticking to that. And since you're going to be riding inside and outside, I would stick to the power meter you're using. You can use our power match feature, and you can actually use the power readings there from your Garmin Vectors, forgive me, to get that set up so that you see those numbers up there on the screen. So hopefully that gives you some insight. You say, obviously on the road, I'll be using my Garmin, therefore would like repeatability with the readings. And I'd be very grateful you could please look at my workouts and let me know if I'm doing anything wrong. Panny, we'll look at that, and we'll have our support staff check them out too to see if there's any technical issues there.
I was just going to add too, an FTP test is hugely mental. It's like really, really taxing. And if you're not in that headspace, I mean, we can forget like how tired we are just from like work and stuff, you know, on top of training. And like, if I have an assessment and I'm not feeling like I can actually really give it everything that day, I won't. I'll just take another rest day and then go for it again. You know, that mental factor. And it's funny, this morning we're working on some video stuff that will actually helpfully help prepare you guys to get the best out of your FTP assessments. So that'll be coming really soon.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. When it comes to assessing, if you don't feel up to it, there's a chance that, you know, maybe you just need to get on the bike and get through the warm up and then see how you feel. And that would be my first recommendation. But some days, you know, you just haven't got it. You know, maybe you had a big weekend and you hit a hard Saturday and Sunday, and you're carrying a ton of fatigue into Monday, Tuesday, you're probably not going to be ready to effectively measure what your new capabilities are with all the training that's preceded this assessment. So bump it a day, bump it 2 days if necessary. It may seem like an overall training setback, but the data that we derive from your FTP assessment is really important moving forward. So try to do it on days where you really feel like you've got it together in all the respects that are going to allow you to actually measure what you can do.
And as an FYI, in most cases, if you're following one of our training plans, that FTP test will be scheduled, and it will be scheduled deliberately. So that ideally you should come into that FTP test with a level of freshness that you would want for an FTP test. So,
Almost always I set it up such that you have Sunday will be like they almost always follow a recovery week. So should be coming out of recovery week feeling pretty good. Then you have Monday off, and then Tuesday you have your assessment workout. But I know a lot of people supplement their indoor training with outdoor riding. And if you happen to do that on the weekend preceding an assessment, well, keep that in mind when it comes time to hop on the bike. Might not be the day to do it.
And just to back up what both of you guys said, FTP tests, and not saying in any situation here that you aren't pushing it as hard as you can, but just to remind all of us, an FTP test is the time when it's a maximal effort. You are trying to find out, like Chad said, your potential. And that's a key thing. When I do my FTP test, my wife actually brings in a garbage can. So she knows already. She brings in a garbage can into the workout room because she knows it's going down. So, all right, Loco. I am now starting traditional base training, high volume 3. I've done high volume 2. And just that you guys know, our traditional base plan, before I go on, it's split into 3 sequential pieces. So that's what he's talking about here. He said that he's just now starting traditional base high volume 3 after doing high volume 2. And I finished that on January 25th. Now February 11th is when you were starting the high volume 3 of traditional base. So there has been some downtime between where I couldn't train for some reason, or for a few reasons. Now my question, how will 2.5 weeks off affect your training? And how can I max out or maximize the outcome from it? Should I do maybe another week? And you say a week more, I assume you're talking about maybe a week more of work. I'm not sure there. If so, what should you do? So Chad, how does 2.5 weeks affect somebody when they're towards the end of their base phase?
Yeah. So 2.5 weeks is long enough to see a decline in a lot of things. And one of them is your aerobic fitness. I don't know that you really need to change anything. This means you've got 8 solid weeks of training in your legs. You missed 2.5 and now you're back for another 4. You're always welcome to tack on another week or two to, in this case, the traditional base 3. But I don't think you need to really do anything going into it, because you're going to reassess your FTP, although there might not be an FTP assessment scheduled. Do another FTP assessment for sure, because there's probably going to be a bit of a drop. And then once you get back to it, you get 4 weeks of base, and then you can dive into your build training. If you want to extend it a week or two, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In the case of those 4 week cycles, I just have riders either tack on a repeat of weeks 2 and 3 before they take their rest week, or take a rest week and then repeat weeks 2 and 3.
Is there a specific point, Chad, where you see, so he had 2.5 weeks off, but is there a tipping point where, as far as time goes, if you take off a week or something like that, where you really start to see things taper? And if so, what starts dropping off?
Yeah, most of what I've felt and experienced personally, most of what I've read, most of what I've seen in riders I've coached is it happens at about 2 weeks. I see a lot of people pin it closer to 10 days. So if you're off the bike for 7, 8, 9, 10 days is where you start to see the sharper decline. And that's typically in your aerobic fitness. So you get back on the bike and what used to feel easy, riding at 70% now feels a little harder. There's not as rapid a decline in your VO2 max or your anaerobic power. Things like that don't fall off quite as sharply, quite as quickly. But the aerobic efficiency
is it pretty easy to recover that relatively, or I shouldn't say pretty easy, but does it come back quicker than it was gained?
Yeah, that's the bummer with aerobic work is the more it falls off, the longer it takes to get back. Whereas with training your VO2 max system, your anaerobic system, those return quite a bit more quickly. So, which is why whenever possible, we try to tell people if they're going to see an extended layoff, you know, 10 plus days, if they can do anything aerobically to mitigate that damage, then by all means do it.
And that's jogging. That's whatever you do, dancing, yeah. Anything,
yeah. anything you can do on vacation. Yeah. Still consider it vacation.
Yeah, there we are. Bill, hello, Coach Chad. So this one's specifically for you, Chad. Hopefully he won't mind if we chime in if it's appropriate. I'm currently using the Trainer Rogue Criterium plan, the mid volume one, and you mentioned hours per week. I assume that's your limitation. That's why you picked it. So you say, as I'm self-coached, what would I be looking for that indicates that I might need to make adjustments to the plan? I use a power meter in addition to a heart rate monitor. Thanks.
A couple things come to mind, Bill. First of which is successful completion of the workouts. So if you're not getting through the workouts, if you're, you know, cutting intervals short, taking intermediate recoveries within the workouts or within the intervals themselves, if for whatever reason you're just not able to adhere to the workouts, then a reduction is certainly in line. On the other side of that, you should see a steady and gradual improvement in FTP. So if at any point that plateaus, something isn't pushing you as far as you need to be pushed. You're not challenging your current capabilities. Rather, you're plateauing because you're doing what you've already become good at.
And I guess with this one, so we get so many questions with people questioning whether they need to make adjustments to the plan. And we have some pretty good blog posts actually on what to do if you're sick, and that kind of falls into time off. And we have some other stuff. So if you look up on our blog, blog.trainerroad.com, you can find a lot of information about how to adjust your training plans. We try to keep it as principle-based as possible. I know each of us have different circumstances, but if we give you the principles that you can use, hopefully you can weed through that. So, and also in the last, let me think, I think it was two episodes ago, or maybe it was the last episode, 22, I believe it was episode 22, Nate and Chad broke down specifically like what to do to alter your training in a very principle-based way. So check that out. I think it was about 18 minutes into that podcast, so you can check that one out too. Eric, greetings, coaches. First off, I love the podcast. You guys are awesome. 2015 is my first year of cycling, and I am hooked. I started with Trainer Road immediately after the summer season in the fall, and I've been doing the sweet spot base and actually repeated the sweet spot base one training plan since I started too early on my structured training. So that means he's got extra base going in there. So with virtual power, my FTP went from 245 to 260. Then I got a Sage's power meter and it dropped to 210. He says, ouch, the truth hurts. Just know in that case, Eric, that's normal. Not every virtual power curve is going to be perfect for each trainer. We try to refine those as much as possible. But there's also variances from trainer to trainer, even if they're the same model. So,
and Eric, what you're most concerned with is the fact that you went from 245 to 260. So that improvement is still real.
Yeah, exactly right.
And also that I should say that don't worry, because that 245 to 260, if you're getting that on virtual power, it will consistently be that if you're doing all the right things, like with tire pressure and pressure on the wheel. So that's the main thing with like virtual power, I think, is as long as it's consistently telling you those same numbers, then you're doing the work.
Yeah. So your FTP before this was probably a lot lower than 210 with that Stages, if you had the Stages earlier. So you've improved. That's what matters. I'm currently in week 4 of sweet spot base 2, and I'm finding it increasingly hard to maintain the power in my workout. One of the guys in my group ride, and you mentioned he's a fast guy, suggested that I do some of the long endurance rides as I need the base to hit those high watts. That sounds like some vague advice. The fast guys always have a lot of advice, don't they? At group rides? Fast guys always do. So he says, I'm on the low volume plan right now. So my question is, am I burning myself out? Should I? And let's touch on that one first. Yeah.
So one of these at a time. I'm not entirely sure what you mean by burning yourself out. Are you questioning perhaps that you have too much intensity and not enough volume in your workout? That could well be the case. But if all you have is time for a low volume plan, then you kind of got to make the most out of each of those workouts. In this case, that's 3 or 4 hours a week. You can't go out and just do one long 3 or 4 hour ride at, you know, whatever pace you can sustain for 3 or 4 hours and expect yourself to get faster. You have to do something that makes each of those few hours count. So I don't think you're burning yourself out.
You also mentioned you're on the low volume plan. So it would be tough unless, I don't know, you mentioned that you're doing group rides. So I don't know how many group rides you're doing and if you're just putting in a huge amount of time, but as long as your volume is relatively reasonable, and when I say that, I mean compared to what you are used to sustaining, as long as it's relatively reasonable, it would be strange to see yourself getting burned out. Rest is something huge to keep an eye on with this type of thing, because if we aren't resting properly, it doesn't take a whole lot of training to run our bodies down a bit and to get fatigued.
Well, yeah, and you're talking about you're in week four, which means the sweet spot plans actually go 5 weeks before we rest you. And that seems to work for most people, especially on a low volume plan, but you might just be fatigued. The fact that you're having trouble sustaining your power is a pretty obvious indicator of you just a little overcooked. So it could be a question of sprinkling in a little extra recovery, especially if you're supplementing your indoor workouts, these three interval workouts each week, with a fair amount of outdoor riding. I don't know what exactly you're doing outdoors, but it could be, and maybe that's what you mean by, am I burning myself out? Maybe you just have too much volume right now and you need to dial it back for a week.
Yeah. And it is good to get advice from fast guys, but also always take everything with a grain of salt, because mm-hmm. what works for one person doesn't work for everybody. And his buddy suggests, and he's in his first year of cycling, so, you know, the fatigue may be a real part of it, but in a long endurance ride, I would say personally no, because that's just going to add to the fatigue. And, you know, this is an endurance sport. You know, it is highly dependent on aerobic fitness, but to win a bike race or to stick with a move takes a huge anaerobic effort. So I always tell people that cycling it's an endurance sport, but you're going to have to put in some huge anaerobic efforts to be fast.
Yeah, no question. I think that we kind of address your second question there, Eric, where you say, should I go try some long endurance rides for 2 to 3 weeks, as my buddy suggested. But Chad, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Eric, there's nothing to say you can't insert those long aerobic rides if you have the time for them. Personally, I'm quite fond of them. I use them for weight loss. I use them for just a disconnect from reality, just an excuse to go out and enjoy the weather as it gets better. And I do see an obvious benefit from it, but that's when I'm willing to ride my bike for 8 to 12 hours a week instead of 3 to 6, which is typically where I land. So if you've got the time for it and it doesn't ratchet the TSS or your weekly stress, your training load up too high, then I think it's a welcome addition, and the aerobic benefits you'll derive from it will actually help your sustainable power over time.
Yeah. And as Dave just mentioned, he said that personally in his case, he probably wouldn't. So this is good advice, because it's coming from both sides. And I think that since you're new with cycling, Eric, you're going to find how your body responds to this type of training and how these changes go. And it's important to take note of those, because you're building your own training Bible right now for you.
You're embarking on a very long learning process. Mm-hmm. So that's as you move through this, you're gonna see, you know, how much weekly stress can I handle and improve, you know, feel a bit of improvement from week to week. When do I start to go backwards and need to dial things back to get recovered enough so that I can start building things up again? Do long rides every other week or maybe every week work well for me? Do they fold into my training well? Do they fit well with my goals, et cetera? Lots of questions to ask. Mm-hmm.
I personally find, just to add to the other perspectives, I'm much like Chad. I find if I am getting fatigued, I do find that lower intensity rides that are slightly longer, I guess, do help, but I easily get carried away and make those rides way too long and exhaust myself. I honestly, when I find myself in your situation, I try to keep my work prescribed to the training plan. And then I really try to optimize my rest.
And there it is, Erica, optimizing the rest. So if you find that during this fourth week, you're already desperately needing a recovery week, take one now. Go ahead and bump that week six up to week five, week four, wherever you need it, such that you can continue to complete the workouts. Otherwise, all you're doing is digging a hole of fatigue and then just digging it deeper and deeper and deeper. So it's there's really no benefit to going about it that way. If you need to rest now, rest now. And it might not require an entire week either. You could just take 2 or 3 days of maybe a day off and then a couple days of light riding, start feeling good again, start feeling motivated, looking at the next workout, thinking, oh yeah, I want to do that workout. Things are back on track.
Yeah. And I think as, you know, he gets further along in this sport and knows more about his body, that's going to inform a lot of the decisions on how tired am I really, you know. But that being said, like, as athletes, we're in our head a lot. I mean, in training, you're always thinking about, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right thing for me? But that's a good way to assess if you do need a rest. I do it all the time. I do it myself. Is this real fatigue, or is it just, you know, am I not motivated to do the workout?
Yeah, exactly. When you get to a point where you're consistently, and I don't like to use the word failing a workout, but when you're just not quite meeting the requirements of the workout, if this happens workout after workout, if you get to a point where you start dreading your workouts, or there's just no fun in it anymore. And, you know, structured training is often hard, and the fun kind of takes a back seat, but there should be some element of it. You should look forward to it. You should recognize that this hard work is going to pay off. I mean, something about it has to be positive. If it just keeps coming up negative, you know, it's probably time to take, you know, a couple days, maybe a week off, and by off, I mean recovery week.
I'm sure I sound like a hype man for our blog right now, but I know we just actually released a blog post on when to bail out of your workouts, or when to know it's gone too far. So that could be some valuable information for you to read that, and then to find out and look back at your workouts and say, oh, actually, I am definitely fatigued and I was past that point, or maybe I'm not there and I actually can go more. Maybe I am just in my head, like Dave said. So your third question, it says, should I just suck it up, shut up, and continue the sweet spot base plan?
and that's what I mean by maybe, but you know, if the workouts keep falling short, maybe it's time to take an early recovery week.
If you're the type of person that responds well to HTFU, that type of a thing, I think we all know if we're a little soft, or we're the type of person that's the person that just pushes through. But sure, if that helps for you, that type of advice, whatever. But you have to, I always find that following data and actually question, you know, having some information behind these decisions instead of just making an emotional one, just like shut up and continue, can really help. But having said that, if you see that you're fine actually and you don't need to do that, then yeah, shut up and continue maybe. I don't know, but whatever works. Just hopefully the advice we gave you hopefully allows you to take a disciplined approach to it.
And I don't want to split hairs here, Eric, but you did say you're finding it increasingly hard to maintain the power. That's very different from not being able to maintain the power. Fatigue's gonna climb as you're, you know, I mean, like I said, you're pushing old boundaries. So if it's getting increasingly hard, you're on track. I mean, that's what we're all about. Mm-hmm. We're trying to push you each time you get on the bike. At least when it comes to the interval workouts. So if it seems harder, it probably is harder. You're working with more fatigue. You're like I said, pushing those boundaries back. That much is okay. If however, you're falling short and you can't increase the power, that's a different topic.
Yeah, I was just going to say, personally for me, almost every one of my high quality hard workouts, there's a point where I think I can't finish it. So
yep,
that's normal. Everyone. That's definitely normal.
Yeah, and remember, base training is not easy. A lot of people think that the base training is just going to be easy, and even if it's a traditional that low and slow approach type of a thing, it's still going to be hard. It's not going to be comfortable. You're going to be spending a lot of hours on the bike if that's the case, or if you're following the sweet spot approach, it's going to be hard. Base training isn't easy. It's not meant to be. It's meant to make you faster and prepare you for a good season. So, as we mentioned earlier, it's normal to see an increase in FTP during your base phase. So hopefully that gives you all the info you need, Eric. Chris, firstly, thanks for the podcast. It's answered so many of my questions without me having to ask. That's why we did this whole thing, right? We get so many questions. It's good to be able to answer them for other people. So I'm a 41-year-old third cat road racer from the UK, having just completed both Sweet Spot High Volume 1 and 2. I retested and moved on to the general build high volume. However, unlike with Sweet Spot, I am struggling to hit the required watts, and whilst I complete the duration of the workout, it is not at the full intensity. Forgive me. Should I move to a lower volume to allow for more rest, or suck it up, And over the duration of the plan, expect to see improvement. It's a funny question, pretty similar to the same thing.
There. Yes, same idea here. So there's a point where you stop being productive, where you can't just, you know, fight through it and you know, finish the workout, albeit at lower intensity levels. With that said, there are some cases where, you know, for instance, the VO2 max intervals, they're pinned at 120%. Well, that doesn't mean that you can operate at 120% of your FTP for 2 or 3 minutes at a time. Some riders can, some riders can't. You know, there might be less distance between their VO2 max power and their FTP. They might be tougher. They might be, there are a lot of things that can influence that. So it's up to you to determine, you know, what can I repeat? If it's a 5 by 3 minute VO2 max interval at 120, what if I tried them at 118 or 115? And you might find that 115 is where you land for VO2 max repeats. Mm-hmm. So depending on the type of interval, especially if it's new stuff that you haven't done, then there's a bit of manipulation that has to take place there.
Mm. He says, I am fortunate that my shift pattern, and that's his shift work there, allows me to complete the high volume plans. But is my age now more of a dictator of work volume than available time? That's a great question. Mm, he says,
that's a really good
my
question.
Initial thoughts are that the higher intensity of general build requires more rest than the sweet spot base work. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so age absolutely becomes a factor. And is in your 40s, which is where I'm at right now, I think Dave's just about there too. It becomes an increasingly larger factor. So you may find that you need to recover more frequently. So maybe instead of working for 3 weeks and then scheduling a recovery week, maybe you work for 2 weeks and schedule a recovery week. Maybe you used to be able to do a high intensity workout every other day. Now you need 2 days of lower intensity work in between those workouts. There is an increase in intensity or general training volume, a training load when you go from base to the build. So if you've reached that point where you're not quite recovering, something needs to change. And it could be, you can take a look at the TSS and maybe just trim that a bit by chopping one interval off of a workout that's just leaving you flat every time. There are a lot of ways to tone it down a bit, but the fact is, when you find that breaking point, so to speak, something needs to change.
You mentioned that your shift work allows you to do that, complete the high volume plans. I could be totally wrong on this assumption, but it seems like that gives you time during the day to complete the workout. If that's the case, if you're working nights, and I could be totally wrong here, but maybe somebody listening to this is working nights and has a similar situation. If somebody's working nights, Chad, and then they have the day to get their training done, but they also have to be resting during that time, that could be difficult too, I would assume, just limiting rest potentially.
Yeah, I can only guess on what that alteration to your whole circadian rhythm does to training. It sounds awful to me, like a really tough thing to deal with, just another form of stress that you have to factor into all the stress that you're already inflicting on yourself and then figure out how to positively adapt. Mm-hmm. That's a tough way to go about it. So if you're working an odd shift, although I'd guess this odd shift helped you get through sweet spot base, there's no reason you wouldn't be able to carry it into the build. So while that might be some influence, and you do need to keep in mind, you know, how stressful are your days leading into your workouts? You know, maybe something's changed outside of training and you're heading into these workouts a little more fatigued in a different way. That might be something.
All right. So Andy, he says, a busy family and work life means training structure is compromised for me. Twice a week and a Sunday social ride is about normal for me. I feel if I only get 2 sessions a week, then they should be really tough ones. This is a super common thing, right? VO2 and anaerobic is what he says in parentheses there. Would you agree?
Pretty much, Andy. If you're only going to be on the bike a couple times a week, then both those workouts are going to have to be pretty demanding workouts. And I'll tell you, I've seen a lot of riders, and I've been one of these riders, who could only do a couple days of intensity and then a long, maybe not social, but a long ride, but at a moderate to easy pace on the weekends. And I saw good results, and I see good results, or I've seen good results in a lot of the riders who have followed this same sort of protocol. You do have to work hard on your days off. Doesn't have to, or on your interval days. Doesn't necessarily have to be VO2 max work and anaerobic work. You can actually do a lot with sweet spot work and threshold work as well. But they do have to be high quality workouts, and high quality typically jibes when it comes to low volume with high intensity.
I know that. So a situation, my brother actually has a similar situation to this, and he's mostly a mountain biker and a more gravity oriented mountain biker, but he's wanting to get stronger on the climb. So he got a kicker, he got the whole deal, he's all set up. He doesn't have a whole lot of time to train right now with his school schedule and work and everything else. So he's been doing just a few sessions and he's been making them hard. And he's in the situation where he's so fatigued from work, so worn out, and his schedule is demanding, which it sounds like, Andy, a busy family and work life, it may not be far off from what you're using there or from what you're experiencing. He's been finding that it's actually been driving him down. I know this is kind of a common theme of this podcast of making sure your rest is optimized and that rest work balance is there, but don't underestimate the fact that even if it's, you can just get in two sessions a week and they may not be long, those can still be very tiring for your body if your the rest of your life is extremely tiring as well.
Yeah. Anytime I'm time restricted, and maybe different types of stress are prevalent in my life at that time, I make sure to get in a couple of VO2 max workouts. It's always been my catch-all. It addresses so many of the training adaptations we're after. It does it on such a limited time structure. You can get quite a lot of work in terms of work volume in very limited amount of time. Same goes with the anaerobic work too. I just find the anaerobic workouts kind of beat me up a little more than the VO2 max workouts do.
And if there's a situation where he is just feeling possibly like these workouts are too tough, because I know I'm sure we have other people in this situation where they're either new to training or they're just worn out from work. And even though they only have time for a couple workouts, it makes you feel bad if you can't do that hard workout. What would be the situation? What should they do if, like, I'm exhausted, I need to do this workout and it's going to be a hard workout, but it's wearing me out. What should they do, Chad? Should they just, because they feel bad.
Yeah. In cases like that, just shoot to maintain your consistency. Don't worry so much about the workload. So just get on the bike and do whatever you're capable of that day. It might be a sweet spot workout. It might be way down at the tempo or the endurance end of things where you just get on there and you just ride so you can feel like you did something. You got a little bit of activity. You kept a leash on your aerobic development. Just if anything, or more than anything, try to maintain your consistency such that when you start feeling better and you start to have a little more energy to devote to the workouts, you can jump back into the intensity.
Yeah. And Andy, I always say this too. It's like, we tend to underestimate how tired our normal life makes us, you know. I would say that all three of us have a pretty, like, it's not taxing physically. We work at a desk most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm tired at the end of the day, you know. You spend the day working. And like Chad was saying, like, do what you can. Like, if I'm not feeling it, I'll do a 30-minute easy recovery ride. If I'm just like, man, I'm wiped out, but just to get some sort of training in, that we have a great workout called Dan's. That one's 30 minutes, pretty easy. I do it. I do it a ton.
Yep.
Yeah, and because he does that, then he comes back the next day and probably has, you know, a markedly better workout than he would have had he tried to just gut it out and kind of half-ass it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something, so I try to think of what I attach myself to with my training, because I'm hugely motivated by when I finish my workout, right? I mean, that's motivating for all of us. I try to attach myself to the diligence to just sticking to my plan to getting something done. But I do not attach that, because we all get an emotional high when we do a super intense workout and we nail it and it feels so good and we kind of get that emotional high. I've actually tried to detach myself from that so that I don't find myself tempted to push myself too hard in those times. Instead, I get more of a rise these days out of just following my plan. And if there's a workout that I can't do that day, at least I did my workout. I may have altered it, may have reduced the intensity or done Dan's or done an easy workout like that, but I did my workout. And that consistency pays off huge later on down the road. So if you do find yourself, and Andy, I don't know if you find yourself in this situation, but I see it regularly with people. If you find yourself that you're fatigued and those two things, you're tempted to go for some workout that looks, the workout profile looks like that, if you looks like an Iron Maiden or something, just spiky and tall. If you're looking to do that, but you're feeling fatigued, don't worry. An easy workout, honestly, get that easy workout done. Let yourself come back for the next one, or maybe even the one after that. If you're really tired, let yourself come back and have more later on. So, David, he says, part one of my question is a conflict I noted in episode 22. Nicholas in France asked about a multi-peak season, and Chad said build and rebuild. And he said that's ideal. But later, Paul, the six-star guy, he wanted to give us 6 stars. If any of you want to give us 6 stars, I don't think Apple has approved that yet, but 5 stars works. He asked about skipping specialty and just going back-to-back base and build plans since he wasn't planning on racing. Chad said that would be repeating too similar of stress. So what's the difference? Always doing the specialty in between builds?
Yeah, David, so that six-star guy was talking about just doing base and build, base and build, base and build. And I felt like that stress would be just too similar to keep the, in this case, FTP on the rise. A rebuild isn't exactly that. A rebuild is taking a little bit of downtime and then repeating a portion or all of your build heading into another specialization phase. So he's not vacillating between just base and build. This guy's doing a base build, then specializing, then heading back into a rebuild, and then heading into another specialty. So a little bit of a difference there.
He says, here's why I ask. I'm planning my 2016 training calendar for cyclocross season. First A race is in September, and last A race is in December, with Bs and Cs scattered between. And those are B and C priority races. That's what he's talking about there. I'm small and light and feel like my cyclocross race limiters have been sustained power and muscular endurance. I have enough time on the calendar to do more than just a straight run through base one, base two, build, and specialty. So I'm thinking about adding an extra general build to address my limiters before I move into short power build and cyclocross specialty. I don't know if you remember, Chad, but this was pretty much my conversation with you last year. Not for cyclocross, yeah, but for mountain biking. Yeah. So his question, would doing two builds back to back like that be bad? What might I do instead? Try to adjust some plans' lengths and also insert rolling road race between the two plans?
I'm going to jump ahead because he's detailed it where he does sweet spot one and two, then he does his general build, and then he puts a couple of extra rest weeks back in the sweet spot zone, and then he jumps into the short power build before he heads into cyclocross specialty. That's an ideal plan. I mean, that's if I had his schedule looking at the way he's looked at it, or you know what he had in front of him with the time allotted, I would probably devise exactly that scenario there.
I did almost the same exact thing last year, David. I did a general build coming into April for it was an A race for the time, but it certainly wasn't my highest priority race. That was national championships in July. So I went in with general power build, and then I actually went into short power build, and then I used our mountain bike specialty plan after that. Hugely successful.
Yeah, it's almost like doing a pre-build and then a build. But what's crucial here is he's not just going build to build. He's doing build, and then he's taking a couple weeks where he backs things off, lets some of that fitness soak in, and then he hits the more important, more specialized build before hitting his, you know, very concentrated, focused training. So he's just adding like one more step to the whole periodization process, and it's an intermediate step where everything flows really nicely. So I think it's an excellent approach.
Yeah, he's lucky that he's got plenty of time to get ready, and that the thing that sticks out to me is just taking that extra bit of rest because it's not going to hurt him. He's got enough time to get to where he needs to be.
Yeah, that rest certainly won't help. And also don't be surprised, at least in my situation last year, I went through general build and I felt like a beast. And then I went into short power build and I felt very small and weak. general build honestly does a great job of addressing that higher intensity stuff as well. But that short power build is going to shrink those rests pretty dramatically. And you're going to find yourself working at the high load. So it'll be hard at first, but you're a cyclocross racer. That's why you do it. You love it. So I assume as much.
And it's a build phase too. So you know, you're building fitness. You're not as focused on performing at that point.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So that covers it for this week's questions. Thanks for submitting them. You can submit your questions to us at support@trainerroad.com. And we will go through the questions that we get and answer as many of them as we can. You can also find this podcast on iTunes. You can find it on Stitcher. You can find it on SoundCloud or whatever podcasting app you use. And you can leave us reviews on those platforms or on SoundCloud if you want. We've actually seen some people going through and bookmarking. You can leave timed comments and you can go on there. And if we answer a question and you want to mark down like this is when they answered X or whatever it is, that I'm sure will help some people out. We would do that too. Maybe we will do that in the future, but that's a lot of time that we'd have to put into it even more. So, but thank you. You can find that on there. Leave us reviews, send us questions. Thanks guys. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks everybody.
Thanks for having me, guys.